We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past and smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Well, thank you, Dave, and again, welcome to Yesteryear. On today's program, we have The Whistler with The Shrunken Head from mid-1942. But first, it's The Amos and Andy Show. When Amos and Andy first went on NBC Red for Pepsodent in August of 1929, the gags of Sam and Henry were continued with deepening characterization. In the program's early years, Gostin and Correll did more than 100 separate voice characterizations, though the bulk of the action was centered on Amos and Andy. Amos and Andy, at its peak, may well have been the most popular radio show ever broadcast. People who lived through the early 1930s still remember the marquees on movie theaters announcing that the film would be stopped at 7 p.m. precisely so that Amos and Andy could be piped in. In February of 43, the 15-minute version ended forever, but in October of 43, Amos and Andy returned with a half-hour weekly variety show. Here they played popular records on CBS and did short Amos and Andy skits between cuts. Even in the watered-down format, they survived until November 1960. Here from January of 1944 is the Amos and Andy Show with special guest star, recording artist Ethel Waters, on Yesteryear.
Major Bowie. I miss the shadow notes, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent. Oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Marge, Amos and
ladies and gentlemen, here is the Amos and Andy Show with their guest tonight, Miss Ethel Waters. Our story tonight opens on a train coming down from Albany. Right now, the train has just left Yonkers and is approaching the outskirts of New York City. Two wealthy men in the club car are talking about an experience one of them had 2 weeks ago on this same train.
So Armstrong wanted to bet me that Consolidated Cable wouldn't hit 47 this year.
Did you bet him?
I'll say I bet him. I bet him $1,000. That's when I pulled out the $1,000 bill and was going to hand it to Lawrence so he could hold the stakes.
You really carry big ones, don't you?
Oh, well, that's another story. I got it on a real estate deal. Anyway, we were standing on the observation platform, and I pulled out this $1,000 bill, and just as I was going to hand it to Lawrence, a gust of wind came along and blew it right out of my hand.
Oh, gee, that's really an awful thing to happen. It happened right around here, huh?
No, it was a little further down, somewhere before we pulled into the 125th Street station. Happened so fast, I couldn't remember the spot.
Well, I guarantee that whoever found it needed a lot more than you do.
Yeah, I guess you're right there. But I tell you, Willard, I'd love to have seen the face on the person who picked it up. I'd have loved to have followed him further to see what he did with the money.
I'll bet somebody's life's changed all of a sudden, huh?
You know, I'd give anything to know what happened to that $1,000 bill. The last time I saw it, it was fluttering down to the street.
You know, Lightning, every time I walk under these railroad tracks here, I kind of get the traveling bug.
Yeah, the traveling sure is nice, all right. My wife's cousin is a Pullman porter.
Yeah, well, the way traveling is today, a Pullman porter is about the only one show of a reservation to go somewhere.
You know a Pullman porter can travel free.
Yeah, well, the trouble is, though, you got to make up them beds, and I don't like housework.
Them Pullman porters really keep going.
Yeah, hey, wait a minute.
What you picking up there, Miss Andy?
Look at this, Lightning. $1,000 greenback. Boy, they sure make that stage money look real these days, don't they?
Yeah, so that sure is a good imitation, all right. Look, Miss Anna, they even got them little silk threads in the paper that the money is printed on.
Yeah, hey, Lightning, wait a minute. Silk threads. And this has got a number on it, too.
Yeah.
I'll bet you this is real money.
Well, just like I say, Andy, this friend of mine says that this is a real $1,000 bill.
Yeah. I tell you, Brother Andy, you're making a big mistake if you put an ad in the newspaper.
I is, huh?
Oh, Kingfish, what is you talking about? It's the only right thing for Andy to do is to put an ad in the lost and found column and at least try to find the person that lost the money. Then his conscience is clear, and he ain't gonna get in no trouble.
Yeah, I gotta agree with Amos on that.
Well, now, wait a minute, you, Andy. Amos ain't restated all the facts. I was thinking of you, partner, dear.
You is, huh?
Yeah, now suppose you put an ad in the paper. Cost you about $8. Then the man come claim the money. And then he refuses to pay for the ad, and you was out $8.
Yeah, I never thought of that.
Yeah, I'll even go further than that, Andy. How long ago did the man lose the money?
I don't know.
Of course you don't know. Maybe he lost it a month ago, maybe 2 months ago. He might want to charge you interest for the time it's been gone. Yeah.
What about that, Amos?
Oh, listen, Andy.
Now, wait a minute, Joe. On top of that, this man is liable to claim that when he lost the $1,000 bill, it was in a genuine leather wallet. And he'll want you to pay for that, too. That's what they do.
You know he is, without a doubt, the cheapest guy in the whole world.
Oh, Andy, listen. Don't pay no attention to the Kingfish. Why don't you take my advice and put an ad in the newspaper?
Yeah, Amos, you was right.
All right, then, boys. If that's the way you want to act, I'll go along with you and show you I was a good sport.
That's the spirit, Kingfish.
Yeah, I'll even help you with putting the ad in the paper. The truth is, I know just the paper you ought to put the ad in, and I think they'll give you a cheaper rate.
What paper is that?
The Weekly Clarion in Butte, Montana.
Well, Amos, I done had my ad in one of the local papers for 4 days now, and I never got no answer. Not even no phony ones.
Well, at least you try to find out who lost it, Andy, and after all, I can't go around and expect you to go around asking everybody in New York about the thing, too. I know that.
Yeah, I ain't gonna ask nobody nothing, believe me.
Well, I would say now that the money belongs to you.
Oh, sure, now it's legal. Amos, I is a rich man. I knowed I'd make good someday.
Yeah, well, now, $1,000 sure is a lot of money. And if I was you, Andy, for once, I would start a bank account and stick that money in the bank.
Yeah, and start drawing checks on it, huh?
No, I mean save it.
Oh, yeah, but that's only the principal. I ain't gonna have nothing to worry about when the interest starts compounding up on me. That 2 off 10 net 60 with the semi-annual in there and everything.
Well, it's your money, Andy.
Yeah, I'm going over and slap it right in the bank now and get me one of them checkbooks. Then I'm gonna move into a big suite at a hotel. I'm gonna hire me a valet and begin living by 2:30. You wanna walk over there with me, Amos?
No, Andy, I'm pretty busy right now. The place where I worked is closed down for a few weeks for retooling the factory. They're changing the machinery in there, and I was going to try to get my taxi cab fixed.
What's the matter with it?
Oh, it just needs a lot of repairs, and I can't afford it. It needs painting and a lot of stuff. I'm going to try to work it, though, so I can get the man at the garage to fix it for me if I can.
Yeah, well, see you later then, son. High Living Brown is going over and start living.
Well, Brother Andrew, there certainly is a good-looking suite you got here at the hotel. But I don't see the reason for the whole thing.
Listen, Kingfish, all of my life I done wanted to be a little high class, and now I'm gonna be it. I'm gonna have breakfast in bed. I'm gonna have lunch in bed. Well, even if I was up in the morning, I'm gonna get back in bed just to have lunch there.
Wait
a minute. Excuse me, Kingfish. Hello?
Your valet is in the lobby here, Mr. Brown.
Oh, well, have him come right up. The valet I done hired is on his way up, Kingfish.
Valet, huh?
Yeah.
Now, there's another thing, Andy. What do you want with a valet?
To wait on me. To press my pants.
Wait a minute. To press your pants.
Yeah.
All your life, you've been putting them under the mattress just like everybody else. Now you won't be different, huh?
Well, I ain't putting my pants under the mattress no more. I is getting tired of them looking like a waffle. I'll tell you that right now.
Look, Andy, if you was got to be high class, you can always send your pants down to the tailor shop to be pressed in the basement.
Yeah, but who is going to put on my shoes and hold my coat and fill the bathtub for me?
Oh, pardon me, Your Highness. Yeah, I didn't think of that. Oh, no.
Listen, Kingfish, I can't figure out why it is that you and everybody else don't want me to spend my money.
And if I was you...
Wait a minute. There's my valet. Uh-oh, now the high-class stuff starts. Come in. Hello, Jeffries.
I do, Miss Brown.
I'm glad to see you was on time, Jeffries. Your job and salary starts as of now.
Well, then, I'll see you later, then.
Just a minute, Mr. Stevens, and I'll be very glad to say goodbye to you.
Mm-hmm.
Jeffries.
Yes, sir.
Of course, we'll get to the bathtub stuff later, but right now you can take my shoes off.
Certainly. Pardon me, sir, but you don't have your shoes on.
Oh, yeah. Well, in that case, you can take off my you can remove my hoses.
Yes, sir.
Get a load of this, Kingfish.
Yeah, I think I'll be running along, Your Highness.
Okay, Kingfish.
And if you ever come down to Earth sometime, look me up.
Toodaloo, Mr. Stevens.
Toodles to you.
Now, Jeffries, I think the first thing to do is kind of figure out your duties here.
Well, I'll try to do everything to the best of my ability, sir.
Yeah, well, that's what I was paying you for.
However, Mr. Brown, if there's anything about my duties that I don't understand, I won't hesitate to ask you.
Well, I don't want you to be bothering me with too many questions. If there's anything you don't understand, why, just keep on balleting around here the best you can.
Yes, sir.
Because, you see, I'm going to be pretty busy around here taking baths and all that kind of stuff.
Well, there's one thing, sir, that... shall I answer it, sir?
Yes, you too.
Mr. Brown, sweet.
I want to speak to Andy.
I'll see if Mr. Brown is in. Who's calling, please?
This here is Frederick Montgomery Gwindell.
Just a moment, please. I'll see if Mr. Brown is in. It's Mr. Gwindell on the phone, Mr. Brown.
Okay, I'll take it. And Jeffries.
Yes, sir.
When you answer the phone, instead of saying Mr. Brown's suite, say Mr. Brown's three-room suite.
Yes, sir.
Hello, Fred. That was my valet.
I done hear that you done gone high class. Say, Andy, remember I told you that after my interview with Ethel Waters, the moving picture star tomorrow night, I was going to take out to dinner and the night spots after?
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, well, I tied up, and since I hear that you is now a playboy, and since you done come into that $1,000 bill, how about you taking out instead of me?
Oh, that's for me. Hold the phone. Jeffries.
Yes, sir.
The master is going out with a movie star. Stand by for some high-class stuff.
Pardon me, Mr. Brown. Where do you keep your evening clothes?
What evening clothes? I'll explain that to you later.
Yes, sir. I presume you will wear a white tie.
Oh, wait a minute. Hello, Fred. Is she going to wear a white tie?
Well, she ain't going to wear a white tie, but might be a good idea for you to wrap one around your neck.
Yeah. Well, I'll do that. Count on me. I'll be dressed within an inch of her life.
Oh, that's great, Andy.
Yeah, I'll have everybody saying, make way for Andrew H. Brown.
Okay, I'll call you and give you all the arrangements about where to meet and everything.
Okay, Fred.
So long.
Goodbye.
Well, Mr. Brown, I suppose you'll want your evening clothes pressed and laid out.
Well, I'll tell you about that, Jeffries. 2 days ago, it seems that a pipe done busted in the closet of my country apartment.
Yes, sir.
The closet got all flooded, and I done got flooded right smack out of my wardrobe.
Yes, sir. Those things do happen.
They do? I mean, do they? What I want you to do now, Jeffries, you are just about my size. I want you to go out and get me a complete new batch of clothes for high class going out, including a gold-headed cane and a solid gold cigarette case, double thick.
Well, High Livin' Andy is all dolled up for his date with Ethel Waters. Right now, the two of them are riding along in a taxicab.
Well, here he is, Miss Waters.
So this is the Hotshot Club.
Yeah, this is it. How much is the fare, driver?
The meter reads 85 cents, sir.
All right. Here's a dollar, my good man. Keep the change and buy yourself a yacht.
I suppose you come here quite often.
Oh, show I practically lives in the place. I is a big man here. Playboy Brown, they calls me. we goes right in here.
Oh, good evening, Miss Waters.
Oh, good evening. Glad to see you, Captain.
My name is Brown.
Walk right in, Miss Waters. The check room is on the left.
Thank you.
Take your things over here, please. Oh, Miss Waters, can I take your wrap?
No, thanks. I think I'll keep my wrap with me.
Okay, Miss Waters.
My name is Brown. You can take my stuff. Here you is. There's my gold-headed cane. Oh, excuse me while I take my solid gold cigarette case out of my overcoat pocket. I got it.
This is a charming place. Certainly it's done up elegant.
Yeah, I knowed you'd like it. I got a good table all reserved. I better check on it, too.
Oh, how do you do, Miss Waters?
Hello there, and how are you?
My name is Brown. I got a table reserved here.
Straight ahead, please, Miss Waters. The captain will take care.
Say, they got some crowd in here.
Yeah, they sure is, ain't they?
Do you have a reservation, sir?
Yeah. I got a reservation under the name of,
How do you do, Miss Waters? I didn't see you with a head turned there.
I got a reservation under the name
of... Just a minute. Oh, Miss Waters, you won't need a reservation.
My name is Brown.
Right this way, please.
Mess is with
me. Yeah. Oh, Miss Waters, there sure is a big crowd here.
Oh, right here, Miss Waters.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'll sit over here. Well, you know, Miss Waters, talking about Hollywood like we was, I was thinking about going out there myself. How is the social life?
Well, now, you know what Hollywood is.
What's that?
Hollywood?
You don't mean to tell me.
It's just one round of parties.
Day and night, huh?
Well, I only go to parties at night because in the daytime I'm on the movie set making pictures.
Yeah, well, you know, I've been kind of toying with the idea of going into moving picture business out there myself. The only thing is, I ain't been able to make up my mind yet whether I wants to finance the pictures or just act in them.
Oh, are you an actor?
Oh, yeah, sure. I thought that I might act and finance both, but the only trouble is... I have such a high salaried actor that I couldn't afford to pay myself.
Oh, yes, I see.
Pardon me, Miss Waters. Do you care to order?
Yes, I think that would be a grand idea.
Yeah, well, while you're taking Miss Waters, I might as well get my order in, too.
What do you have tonight that's special, Captain?
Well, our steaks are very, very good.
Steak? That would just hit the spot with me.
May I suggest that the thick tenderloin steak for two?
Oh, that would suit me fine.
Yeah, write that down, double thick tenderloin steak for two.
And what are you going to have?
Bring me the same, I guess.
Very good. I'll bring you some nice vegetables, too. Just leave it to me.
Why, Ethel, darling, when did you get to New York?
Florence, this is a surprise. Sit down.
My name is Brown.
Ethel, you're looking wonderful. Well, you're pretty stunned yourself in that sequence gown you got on. It's gorgeous. Who are you here with, Florence?
Oh, we just come in. I was with Ed and Fritzy and Dorothy. You know, the whole crowd.
Well, call them all over here and have dinner with us.
Oh, wonderful. Hey, gang, look who's here. Come on over.
Well, I didn't expect to see you here. When did you get in?
Come on. Sit down, all of you. We can all sit at this table. We'll get some extra chairs. And I'll order for all of you. How about having what we're having? Double thick tenderloin steaks for two.
Oh, that would be perfect.
Oh, waiter. Make that order. 8 more double thick steaks for two, please.
My name is Brown.
That is why my heart is flying high.
mister, 'cause I know we'll have a cabin in the sky, and that will have to hold you.
Ethel, we all going out to my house. Why don't you come along with us?
Well, that sounds good to me.
Oh, how about the check with Denny?
Oh, no, no. Wait a minute. You're my guest. I'll join you folks in the front door in just a moment. Say, waiter, bring my escort the check, please.
Okay, Miss Waters.
Yeah.
I have it right here, sir.
Yeah, thanks. Let's see now. That's $12 and...
No, no. That's $120.
Oh, yeah. But I ain't got my glasses. Yeah,
Oh, you don't mind if we run along, do you? I do want to thank you for a lovely dinner and for inviting all my friends. And I hope to see you again sometime, Mr. What was the name?
Brown.
So you had a big time last night, huh, Ender?
Yeah, big time. I done went out with a movie star and lots of other people. All big time.
Oh, that's great. Glad to hear it, because I know that you wanted to go out and put on the dog and all that stuff.
Yeah, well, the only thing is, not that it's worrying me or nothing.
I know you ain't worried, because you're the type of man now that ain't worried about nothing.
No, I don't worry about that.
When you loaded, you ain't never worried. I know that.
Yeah, but wait a minute, though. I think that I spend a little too much money.
Yeah, well, when you got a checkbook, you kind of lose control, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, but I was going to take your advice, Kingfish, and leave the rest of it where it is and let it draw interest.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Wait a minute. Hello?
Mr. Andrew Brown, please.
Speaking.
This is the assistant manager over at the Harlem Bank. Mr. Brown, we find that your account is overdrawn $18.
What's that?
That's right. And we must ask that you take care of this today.
Yes, overdrawn $18, huh?
Yes, sir. Goodbye, sir.
Well, Ender, the whole $1,000 is all gone, huh?
Yeah, and $18 besides.
Yeah, I'm really sorry to hear that. If you'd bought war bonds with it, why, you'd have still had it. Plus.
Yeah, well, I guess I kind of overwrote myself with them checks there. You see, I never had no money before. Never seen it get away so fast. Say, Kingfish, I wonder if you'd do me a favor.
Oh, sure, Ender. I'd do anything again to help you.
Yeah, would you stop by my hotel and get my gold-headed cane and my gold cigarette lighter, then stop over at Honest Joe's and see if you can get at least $18 on them? Come in, Amos. Come in.
Yeah, I got your phone call, Ann, saying that you wanted to see me here at the office about something important. Now, what's wrong?
Nothing wrong. Just want you to come out in the back alley with me for a second.
Look, Ann, I was in a big hurry. I tell you the truth. I got an appointment to see a man about a job. You see, I ain't been doing so good since my taxi cab is laid up, so if you could just tell me now what you want, why, maybe I could take care of it and then get going a little quicker. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, it ain't gonna take but a second, Amos. Come on back here in the alley.
Well, all right. I'll come back there with you. So tell me, though, Andy.
Well, Amos, there it is.
What is... Andy, is that my cab?
Yes, sir. All repaired and painted up for you.
But, Andy...
It's all paid for, too, Amos. From me to you, with love.
Oh, gee, I hardly recognize it, Andy. It looks so good. Oh, it's just the right color. Oh, they took the dents out of the fenders, too. Oh, look at... Oh, Andy, this is the nicest thing that done ever happened to me.
Oh, that's all right.
Oh, but the money that must have cost, you ain't had no business spending that much.
Oh, Amos, I got a lot of money. I just talked to my banker on the phone. He called me, too. I didn't call him. Yeah, they like me over there. They're talking about $18 like it's nothing at all. Sure, I can afford a thing like this easy.
Well, Andy, gee, I can't get over it. It was a wonderful thing for you to do. I was so excited about it that I'm going right out today and start working.
Okay. Good luck to you, son.
And I still say, Willard, that I wouldn't think so much about losing the money if I could just know what happened to that $1,000 bill.
Well, I guess you'll just have to keep on wondering.
Yeah, I guess so. Say, I'm going over to 86 and Park. Can I drop you off?
No, no thanks. I go over the west side. Well, Austin, I'll see you during the week.
Yeah, yeah, maybe we'll have lunch together. So long. Oh, taxi, 86 and Park, please.
Yeah, sir.
Nice looking cab you have here. New paint job, isn't it?
Yeah, sir, it's just been fixed up. A friend of mine had it done for me.
Oh, well, you're lucky.
Yeah, I'll say I was lucky. And a lucky thing happened to this friend of mine, too.
Oh, that's so?
Yeah, sir, you see, this friend, a fellow by the name of Andy, was walking along the street one day, right under the railroad tracks in Harlem, and... Gee, did you see that car cut right in front of me then?
It was a pretty close shave. I don't think you better talk and drive at the same time.
Yeah, sir, I guess you're right.
This is Harlow Wilcox speaking for all of us and bidding all of you a pleasant good night.
From January of 1944, there's the Amos and Andy Show with special guest star Ethel Waters. In a moment, it's The Whistler with The Case of the Shrunken Head as yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big band swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
The Whistler, with echoing footsteps and a haunting whistle, made its way onto radio on CBS in 1942. The whistle was comprised of 13 notes, which were destined to become one of the all-time lingering melodies of radio. In the melodramatic early years, The Whistler was written and produced by J. Donald Wilson. The Whistler served up generous portions of ironic commentary with his stories. Tales were full of twists and surprises, usually containing a fine double twist at the end. By 1947, The Whistler went coast to coast. Despite its memorable nature of format, The Whistler had a rather spotty record on the air. For most of that run, it was heard only regionally, billed over the Western CBS network through the mid-1940s as the Pacific Coast Leading Mystery Show. The Whistler was played through most of the run by Bill Foreman. Wilbur Hatch, who composed the haunting theme, once estimated that only one person in 20 could come close to whistling the melody. Here now, from June of 1942, is The Whistler with The Case of the Shrunken Head on this edition of Yesteryear.
Wait a minute. Have you heard The Whistler? I'm The Whistler. If you could look upon Charlie as I do, you'd realize he's inanimate, dead, with no power to harm.
That was old Peter Medford, the jungle explorer, now confined to a wheelchair with paralysis.
I would suggest that you leave this place at once, Miss Medford. At once.
That was Clay Alden, Peter Medford's secretary. And this is Marie, Peter Medford's young niece.
No, no, no. It's no dream. It's here. Here in my room.
Saturday night, and CBS presents another in the new mystery series, The Whistler.
And I, The Whistler, know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales, many secrets hidden in the hearts of men and women who've stepped into the shadows. I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak. And so I tell you tonight the strange mystery of the shrunken head. In the quickening darkness of a stormy fall evening, a young girl paces the deserted platform of a small suburban railroad station. From her anxious attitude, we know that she's waiting for someone. But just be patient, Miss Medford. There is someone coming to meet you. He has just now driven up. He's coming through the station door, walking up behind you.
Miss Medford?
Oh, yes, I...
Sorry to have kept you waiting. I'm Clay Alden.
Oh, yes. Uncle Peter has mentioned you in his letters. His secretary, aren't you?
That's right.
Where is my uncle?
He was disappointed he couldn't meet you. Pretty much of a task for the old gentleman to get around these days. You see, he's confined to a wheelchair.
Oh, I didn't know. Serious?
Legs are paralyzed. Result of jungle fever. Just came on him lately.
How awful.
Yes, it's a shame, all right. Well, shall we get going? Car's out front. Better run for it or you'll get wet.
Yes.
I'll take care of your luggage.
Thank you very much.
Rather a disappointing reception, Marie Medford, wouldn't you think? You have come over 2,000 miles all by yourself just to see the only living relative you have in the world. Then you are met by a stranger. The car turns up the tree-lined driveway. This, Marie, is what is known in this countryside as Medford Manor. Yes, Medford Manor. It's all that the name implies, a gloomy pile of a structure, even made gloomier by the blackness of the night and the driving rain. Oh, someone has heard the car approach. The door is open. It's the butler, Victor. Well, Marie, are you going in? What a pity you don't know what I do. You'd never cross that threshold if you did. Too late now. Your luggage is being brought in. The young man and the butler stand beside you. The door closes.
Victor?
Yes?
Take Miss Medford's luggage upstairs to the south corner bedroom.
The south corner bedroom, sir?
Certainly. Why not?
Very good, sir. Any further instructions?
No. Has Mr. Medford retired yet?
Not yet, sir. He's in his study. I just gave him his warm milk. He may have dozed off, sir.
All right. Thank you, Victor.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Would you care to follow Victor to your room, Miss Medford?
I'd like to see my uncle now, if I could, please.
Very well. Come this way. Here we are. I'll speak to him.
Wait here, please.
Well, Marie, how do you like it? You get a feeling of something not as it should be? Strange fellow, this Clay. And the butler, too. Look about you.
What a depressing house. Huge and cold and unfriendly.
Not at all as you'd imagined it. Is it, Marie?
Your uncle will see you now.
Thank you.
Marie, my dear child, come in, come in, come in.
Uncle.
Well, my poor child, take off those wet things at once. Alden, what's the matter with you? My niece will catch your death. Help her off with those things.
Sorry, Mr. Medford.
Thank you.
Bless my soul, pretty as a picture. You got a kiss for us?
Of course.
That's it. Now you sit down here beside me. I'm sorry I couldn't meet you, my dear, but I'm afraid the ravages of old age and malaria have finally caught up with me. My one comfort is this wheelchair. Getting onto it, though, you should see me wheeling all over the house. The only thing that baffles me is the stairs. My life is now confined to the first floor only. Oh, pretty bad trip, wasn't it?
Seemed endless.
Well, you're here now, thank goodness. This is your home. You're free to come and go and do whatever you please.
Thank you, Uncle Peter.
Don't suppose any of this is what you imagined. I know that I'm different from what I'd hoped you'd find.
Tell me, Uncle Peter, do you think you'd have recognized me if you hadn't known I was coming?
Recognize you? Why, of course. You have the family of Medford written all over you. Oh. No mistaking you, my dear. Well, Alden, what are you standing there for? What are you staring at?
Oh, waiting to see if you need anything for this.
No, that's all. I'll ring for you if I need you.
Yes, sir.
Oh, I forgot to thank him.
For what? He gets paid for whatever he does.
Forgive me for saying this, but somehow I don't like that young man.
Was he rude to you?
Oh, no, not actually. But he seems to resent my being here. And the butler, he seems resentful, too. I feel as though I don't belong.
Oh, they're harmless enough. But getting back to you, I was so sorry. I was in South America at the time it happened. Must have been pretty ghastly for you, my child.
Like a nightmare, Uncle Peter. I'm not myself yet.
I should think not. An only child losing both parents so suddenly and so horribly.
Maybe it was a good thing it was sudden.
it had happened at all. One spectator at the crash said that they never knew what happened.
Now, you mustn't talk about it. All that's behind you. A new life from now on.
Of course. That's the way I want to look at it, Uncle Peter. And I'd like to get something to do.
What? Oh, no.
Oh, yes, really, I would. I want to be active if I can. I'm quite capable. I'd really like to get a job, Uncle Peter.
Well, bless my soul.
Secretarial work or anything.
Well, that might not be a bad idea. It'll keep you from brooding. We'll see what we can do. And now I have a little surprise for you. You haven't seen my collection.
No, I haven't. Mother and Father often talked about it.
Well, if you'll just open that door over there, I'll show some of it to you.
Oh, this one?
That's right. You'll find the light switch just inside.
Why, it's a regular museum. All these glass cases.
Over here, my dear. Now, look at these. Well, what do you think of them?
Well, they're horrible, Uncle Peter. They look like tiny human heads.
Well, that's exactly what they are. Life size at one time, but isn't it remarkable the way they shrink them down? Look at this one. See his little features? Perfect in every detail. He's my favorite. Interesting history about him. He was once a white man.
Oh.
Forced down in the South American jungle when his plane cracked up. The headhunters got hold of him, and there he is. His name is Charlie. I'd like to see him closer. I can unlock the case.
No, please. Do you mind if I don't look anymore?
Oh, dear. I keep forgetting people are sometimes shocked by these things. I see them only through a collector's eyes. Oh, well, you'll have lots of time to look over my jungle paraphernalia. Meanwhile, perhaps you'd better get some rest. Would you like Victor to get you something to eat?
No, thank you, Uncle Peter. But I am rather tired. I think I'll say goodnight to you.
Know your way about, do you?
Yes, I'll find my room. Good night, Uncle Peter.
Good night, my sweet child. I'll see you in the morning.
Poor Marie. Know something? You're going to have dreams tonight. Unpleasant ones, too. Well, let's move the clock ahead and go to Marie's bedroom. It's a little after 3 a.m. She's asleep now. The rain's still coming down. The wind moans outside. Hear it? Yes, Marie's asleep. Looks peaceful enough lying there in that big four-poster bed. But suddenly she begins to toss.
My name's Charlie. No. Oh, how foolish. Only a dream. And it seems so real. I'm sure I heard it whisper. Only the wind. Oh, I wish I hadn't seen that dreadful thing.
Miss Medford, are you all right?
Who there?
Clay Alden.
Oh, yes, Mr. Alden. I just had a bad dream, that's all. I'm quite all right, thank you.
Well, if you need anything, just ring.
Yes, I will. Sorry I disturbed you.
Not at all.
Oh, I must get some sleep. Stop dreaming.
But little sleep for you, Marie. The moments tick by with dreadful slowness. Fearing to close her eyes, she lies staring at the roof of her bed, lying in agony for the moment when that hideous little head will again come floating in through space. It is morning now. A dreary fog still hovers depressingly over the old house, a cold clamminess which only adds to Marie's sensation of uneasiness. In the dismal morning room, Victor is serving breakfast to Clay Alden and Marie.
Shame you didn't rest well last night, Miss Medford.
It's just the newness of everything. I'll get used to it, Victor.
I hope you will, Miss.
Of course you will.
Oh, and Mr. Alden, don't mention anything to my uncle about that silly dream I had last night.
Oh, of course not.
Did you have a bad night, Miss?
Yes. The daytime makes such a difference in things.
Even you seem different, Mr. Alden.
For the better, I trust.
Oh, sorry. That wasn't very complimentary. Oh, here comes Uncle.
Well, good morning, you two.
Good morning, Mr. Medford.
Morning, Uncle Peter.
You look quite fit this morning, sir.
Feeling splendidly. Had the best night's sleep in I don't know how long. And how are you feeling, my child?
Quite well, thank you, Uncle.
Oh, you remember our conversation of last evening? I mean, about you wanting to do something?
Yes.
I think I've got it for you. Friend of mine named Phineas Drake collects books. Just purchased the library complete. Wants someone to catalog it for him. Small pay, but not too difficult. Well, how does it sound?
Oh, it sounds wonderful. It's just what I want.
Splendid. I'll call him again after breakfast. Can you imagine such an ambitious young girl, Alden? Wants to work and she's only worth a cool million.
Oh, not yet, I'm not, Uncle Peter.
Well, whenever you become of age or whatever it said in your father's will.
I thought you knew what it said. I won't inherit my cool million until I'm married.
What was that, Miss Medford?
You see, right away you put notions into his head. She said she won't come into her inheritance until she marries. Why her father made that strange provision, I shall never know. But, Marie, you stay your distance from this young man.
Oh, Uncle Peter, you're making him embarrassed.
Can't an old man have his little joke? Anyway, with all the eligible young men you'll meet, poor Alden won't stand a chance.
Oh, Peter, please.
All right. Victor, where are my eggs?
Right here, sir.
Oh, yes, soft-boiled eggs. Bet your diet. Tell me, my dear, did you find your room comfortable?
Oh, yes, it's a lovely room. It's almost like a castle.
Oh, I miss my old room. The one next to yours. I haven't been up there in over a month. One day soon, I'll have Victor and Alden carry me up those stairs just to see if the place looks the same. Victor, serve my niece some more coffee.
Yes, of course, sir.
So, Marie, you're going to have something to do, eh? Well, you're an intelligent girl. Should do well at your new assignment. It's harder work than you thought, though.
Hours of scanning small print and copying down the individual histories of countless books.
All goes well for several weeks. And then early one afternoon, you return home, Marie, to find your uncle as usual in his study. Why are you so upset, Marie?
Peter.
Marie, well, you're home early. You're not finished already.
Finished as far as Mr. Phineas Drake is concerned. I can't understand you. I've done my work well. This afternoon, Mr. Drake came to me and said he had no further use for my services.
What?
Didn't explain why, just looked at me queerly and said he preferred someone else to finish the job.
Well, that's strange. Oh, well, he's an old crank. Don't let this upset you. We'll find something else for you to do. No, don't you worry.
What's wrong with my work, Mr. Palando? Surely it's been satisfactory.
Well, you see, because of the peculiar nature of my profession, I must have someone more experienced. I'm sorry, Miss Medford.
But I didn't, Professor Hanley. I did exactly as you instructed. What on earth is wrong?
You'll excuse me, Miss Medford, but your ability as an assistant has not come up to standard.
Please listen, Dr. Humphrey. I've studied botany, and I've checked this manuscript most carefully. There's not a single mistake.
Very sorry, Miss Medford, but they're not all acceptable. Have to get someone else.
Understand it, Uncle Peter. Is there something wrong with me?
Well, I shall certainly call Dr. Humphrey right away.
Oh, no, I'd rather you didn't.
But it was only the other day he telephoned me and said what an efficient secretary he thought you were.
Something wrong somewhere.
You know, Marie, I think I'd give up this idea of wanting to work. I haven't mentioned it to you, but you're really not looking your best lately.
Well, to tell the truth, Uncle, I haven't been sleeping well. I have the most frightening nightmares. In fact, it's the same dream every night.
Well, that's all. What's the dream about?
Well, I keep seeing that little head. The one you said was called Charlie.
Oh, dear. I suppose I made a mistake showing that to you on your first night. If you could only look upon Charlie as I do, you'd realize it is an animate dead, with no power at all to do you harm. You build up a phobia about that head. Now, the thing to do is to destroy that fear by facing it. You come along with me, my dear.
You mean in there again?
It's the only way. Now, come along.
Oh, no, Uncle Peter.
I know what I'm doing. Open that door, Marie. I'm going to make you realize how foolish you've been. Over here, my dear. Oh, I know you think I'm being cruel, but I know my psychology. Why, that's strange.
What is it, Uncle Peter?
Why, somebody's broken into this case. Ring for Victor and get Alden here at once.
Is something missing?
Somebody has deliberately taken that head.
So Charlie is missing, eh? Wonder who could have broken the lock and lifted the little head from its black velvet pad. I wonder. But now, several nights have passed. Still, the head called Charlie has not reappeared. Marie has just taken a sedative her Uncle Peter gave her and is now lying on her bed, tossing fretfully, praying for sleep. Sleep, Marie. Tonight?
Oh, dear heaven. No dreams tonight. Let me get some sleep.
My name's Charlie.
No.
My name's Charlie.
No.
My name's Charlie.
No.
Yes, Marie. Open your eyes and look at me.
No.
You're
no.
Holding me in your hands, Marie.
Downstairs asleep. Well, you're frightened out of your wits. Another of those dreams?
It was no dream this time. The head. It's there in my room.
What?
It told me to open my eyes and look at it. And there it was in my hand. I was so frightened, I threw it to the floor.
Oh, I know dreams can seem terribly real.
It was no dream, I tell you. It's there now in my room. When I threw it on the floor, it rolled to the foot of my bed. Oh, don't look at me as though I'm a saint. Come look for yourself if you don't believe me.
Just as you say.
It's right here. I'll turn on this lamp. Here. Now, it's gone. It was here. It was. I saw it as plainly as I can see you. Oh, I know you think I'm crazy. But I saw it. I saw it. I tell you, I saw it.
Medford, please.
What's wrong with Medford? I thought I heard you scream. Please.
It's your uncle.
Are
you all right? I'm
coming
down, Uncle Peter. I must talk to you.
Now, you must get hold of yourself, my dear.
Oh, you don't think I'm crazy. But I really did see it. I touched it. And it was nestled like an orange in my hand. I woke up and threw it on the floor. And when Mr. Alden and I came back to the room, it was gone. Oh, you don't believe I actually saw it. Do you?
Now, compose yourself. I want to ask you some questions. First of all, in this dream, do you hear a voice of any kind?
Yes. A voice that whispers, "My name's Charlie," over and over. But tonight it said something different.
Now, you can go on, my dear. I had hoped and prayed with all my heart that this wouldn't happen to you. I'm afraid it has.
What are you trying to tell me, Uncle Pete?
You've heard me go on about the fine old Medford stock. Well, it so happens our branch isn't so fine. There's been something wrong with us.
You mean insanity? Oh, well, there is insanity in the family. Why haven't I heard of it before?
Because, my dear, it's the Medford secret.
Oh. Oh, Peter... I'm frightened.
Whatever you do, Marie, you must not let go of yourself.
But it's not easy being told you're mad. Uncle Peter, if I am afflicted, then all those people must have known. That's why they discharged me. But how do they know? What did I do that would give evidence?
Perhaps you do things you're not aware of.
Maybe I do. Seems the only logical answer. Oh, Uncle Peter.
What's to become of
me? Now, we'll work this out together, my dear child. No one will ever know. You can depend upon me. I won't leave. From tonight on, I shall be taken upstairs, and I'll stay near you. Knowing that which afflicts us gives us a weapon with which to fight it. Just you rely upon me, my dear.
Oh, who is it?
Clay Alden. I must see you for a moment.
Very well.
Better not close it. I'll have to talk quietly.
Something wrong?
Terribly wrong. The old gentleman's asleep in the next room. I had to wait till he dozed off before I could see you.
Well?
It's about the head.
The head?
The one he calls Charlie. It's back in its case.
When did this happen?
Sometime last night, I guess. After your nightmare.
Yes, I'm convinced now that that's all it was.
I'm not so sure.
What?
When you threw Charlie to the floor, a piece of his ear broke off. I found it after you went downstairs. Here it is. It's Charlie's ear, all right. I checked it very carefully.
Oh, no, this doesn't make sense.
Did you ring for me, miss?
No, Victor, no, I didn't ring.
Oh, sorry, miss. Excuse me.
Miss Bedford, you're in grave danger. You've got to leave this house as quickly as you can and never come back.
What's going on in here?
Uncle.
What was that I heard you telling my niece, Clay?
I said she should leave this house and never come back.
All the impudence. Alden, explain yourself.
I'll be glad to, sir. I think Miss Medford is in danger of losing her sanity as well as her life.
What is all this poppycock? Are you trying to frighten my niece? Lord knows she's been through enough.
She's been through too much. She weren't made of pretty stout stuff. She'd have been a gibbering idiot by this time.
Alden, you're packing your things and leaving at once.
Leaving? I'm afraid you're wrong, sir. I'm not leaving. Not yet. Maybe you're leaving.
Now, Mr. Alden, what's the meaning of this?
I'm sorry to break it to you this way, but I'm definitely convinced your uncle is a diabolical fiend.
I can take so much and no more. Look here, Alden. If you know what's good for you, you'll leave here at once. At once, you hear?
You're pretty anxious to get rid of me, but it's too late. Miss Medford, you remember your father's will. You'd come into your money only if you married. Well, if you didn't marry, Uncle Peter would get the money. And if he could prove you were insane, you'd never be able to marry. You see how it all works out?
Well, how dare you, Mr.
Listen
Alden.
Listen to that maniac.
Listen to me, Miss Medford. Your uncle, your loving uncle, was the one who telephoned your employers and told them you were crazy. Phineas Drake and all the others told me so today.
I don't believe
lies,
it.
Lies, lies.
Why, your uncle even told me you were crazy. I know what's happened. He himself smashed the lock and took the head from its case and planted it last night in your room. If you'll stand on a chair and look above your bed as I did this afternoon, you'll see a small radio loudspeaker. It's hooked up to a microphone in the back stairs hallway. The voice you heard was your Uncle Peter.
I don't believe you.
Last night, after you came out in the hallway, your Uncle Peter grabbed up the head, stepped out onto that balcony, and climbed down the vines to his study.
Why, he's as mad as a March hare. How could I possibly be a party to such a monstrous plot? Why, I can't even walk.
Look at this ear, a piece of Charlie's ear. I found it in Marie's room. That proves she wasn't dreaming, and it fits perfectly. I've tried it.
Why, you... Give me that ear. Give it to me!
Oh, Peter, you're walking.
Give it to me!
Look at him, Marie, standing unaided. Does that prove anything to you?
Oh, Peter. Oh, then it's true.
All right, it's true. I can walk. But you are insane, Marie. Insane. You'll never marry anyone, Marie. I'll see to that, Victor. Grab him.
Don't move, Mr. Medford. Easy now.
Don't believe what Alden says. You're crazy, Marie. There's no escaping it. You'll have those dreams, and Charlie will visit you every night. You'll hear him saying, my name's Charlie. My name's Charlie. My name's Charlie.
Hold him, Victor. Got him, sir. Well, I think you're the one who's crazy, Medford. Maybe that could be proved.
Take your hands off me.
Take it easy now, Mr. Medford. Take it easy.
There's nothing wrong with me. You know it.
Is the car ready, Victor?
Yes, it's ready. Come in, gentlemen. These are the officers.
Yeah, then you'd better take him away.
Yes, sir. Please come quietly, Mr. Medford.
I'm not crazy. I'm not.
Hello.
You're lying, on a lie. Lying, you hear? You're lying.
I'm terribly sorry about this, Marie. Terribly sorry. But it's all for the best.
How can it be for the best? But think what this means. He's my father's brother, and if he's insane, then it means that I might be too. Friends in the past.
No, don't worry, Marie. Don't worry, you're safe. You're perfectly normal, I know.
No?
Yes. You see, he wasn't your real uncle. He was your father's foster brother. I found proof. So you see, you've nothing in the world to fear.
How do you know that?
Someday, Marie, I'll tell you all about it. Tomorrow, maybe.
Why don't you tell her now, Clay? Tell her why you were working as Peter Medford's secretary. Because your father was Peter's partner, his partner, that your father was ruined in business by Peter and killed himself in disgrace, that you suspected him of having cheated your father, that you came to find the evidence and discovered in time Peter's diabolical plan to prevent Marie from ever marrying. Better tell her, Clay. I would.
CBS has presented The Whistler.
From June 13th of 1942, it's been The Shrunken Head on The Whistler. That's all we have time for on this rendition of Yesteryear. We're here with you every week at this time, so make it a point to join us again next week and invite a friend to listen to the best of the golden age of radio right here on Yesteryear. Till next time, I'm Craig Roberts. So long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show.